So here we are. I like me personally is our thought for today. I like me personality-wise. I like me personality-wise. I like me personality-wise. What does it mean to like ourselves personality-wise? Have you ever thought of that? Have you ever considered that as a possibility? Do you like your personality? Do you like who you are? Are you a positive, joyous, friendly, desirable, exciting person? Are you somebody that you would like to meet? Are you somebody that you would like to know? Are you somebody that you'd like to have in your world? Have you ever considered that? Are you somebody that you would like to know? Would you walk across the street to meet yourself? Have you thought of who you are? Have you thought of the type of person that you present in your world? Obviously, you like the person you are because that's what you have done. You have created this kind of person in your world, and you have created this kind of person expressing yourself. Now, what is the kind of person that we are? What are we personality-wise? Are we exciting people who like other people in our world? Are we exciting people who like to be alone? Are we exciting people who like to encourage other people to do things and to act in beautiful ways or act in negative ways? Do we want to be a leader? Do we want people to go into our pathway and follow what we suggest for them to do? What kind of person are we? What kind of personality are we? To be the kind of personality that we are means that we must be in charge of ourselves. We must be in charge of our thoughts, in charge of our actions, in charge of everything that exists in our world. To be in charge of everything that exists in our world means that we are alert, we are alive, we are awake. If we have a job of being a mechanic, we have to go to the automobile and we must listen to the engine. We must let the engine talk to us. Now, the engine doesn't always talk to us. It sometimes is very quiet. So we have to get a diagnostic test on the engine to know what the engine is saying, because the engine sometimes does not tell us its problems. It sort of hides it in the smooth running, the flowing of the oil and the grease and the parts that are in proper order. But as we listen with a diagnostic tester, we hear within the engine that there is a murmur, like a heart murmur. We hear there is a slight pinging that isn't evident to the naked ear. We hear that there is an irregular beat, an irregular pulse. Now, to a mechanic looking at his diagnostic machine, this means something. To the doctor listening on the stethoscope, to your heart, to your lungs, to your body, these things all mean something. To you and me, they perhaps don't mean a thing. We think everything's going just fine. People die as they are out running on their morning jog in perfect health, happy with their family, happy with their world, happy with everything they're doing, and they just pop, drop over dead. And you say, how can that be? And many have just been to the doctor the day or week before, having had a physical examination or something of that nature, and it was not detected that there was a problem. Now, we don't always know when we have problems within our personality, because we don't have a diagnostic tester for our personality. We don't have a diagnostic tester for our individuality, for our uniqueness. For if everyone were the same, this would be a very unhappy world, it would be a very uninteresting world. Who would like a world of clones? You know exactly what the other person is thinking. You know exactly what the other person is going to do. You know exactly how the other person is going to act under any given circumstance. There's no delight of challenge, of amusement, of amazement in life. And this is what our personality-wise self wants to do. This is why we are not all just a bunch of atoms, as pure atoms together. We are atoms with an intelligence within us. And this intelligence is our personality. And what is our personality? Our personality is our unique individuality. It's who we are as a special person. We have eight people here, and of these eight people, and two dogs, of these eight people, is any person even a little alike the other? Well, perhaps in the body. A woman is a woman and a man is a man, and there are similarities. But even in the similarities, they're different. Some men have hair on their chest, some don't. Some women have their hair long and some have it short. Some people have toenails that they paint and some don't. All sorts of varieties within us, within our own nature. Now, if you were to have all of our hair exactly the same, all of the chest hair exactly the same, all of the toenails with no paint or with paint, would we look alike then? We still wouldn't look alike. Because we're unique. We're unique. We're short and tall and fat or thin. That's our physiological self. Now what is our mental self? Our mental self is even more diverse than our physical self. Our mental self has so many aspects to it, and we are not paying attention to those aspects. We're letting ourselves be controlled by the world around us instead of controlling the world around us. We have one of our required listening tapes, Controlling Your World. How many people have listened to that tape? We all have at one time or another. But have we paid attention to it? Have we paid attention to controlling your world? Well, you shouldn't manipulate your world. You shouldn't manipulate people. Hey, get off it. Every moment of your life, you're manipulating yourself. Every moment of your life, you're manipulating another person. You smile at someone because you want to smile from them. You say a kind word because you want a kind word back to them. You say an unkind word because you want an unkind word back from them. Yeah, that too. That too. This is the kind of people we are. This is the kind of creators we are. We are not divine creators. That's the first time you heard that, isn't it? We are not divine creators. We could be. We could be. But we are creators who are creating a diversity of beingness. Let's just go to the divine creator. The divine creator creates the archetypal, okay? The divine creator creates the is. The divine creator has nothing which compares to anything else in it. All just is. The human creator creates diversity. The human creator creates continuity. The human creator creates the motion picture of putting all of the isnesses together as it chooses to do so. Now, you may put the isnesses together in a harmonious way and have a harmonious world. You may put the isnesses together as a very joyful and a very happy thing and make you feel very wonderful. It's our choice. We get closer to our divine creativeness when we do that. Now, we can also put the isnesses together and read into them negativity. We can read into our isnesses limitation. We can read into our isnesses destruction and unhappiness. Now, if we do that, that doesn't make the is any less real. It's merely the illusion that we're wrapping it in. Now, the young man who was so disgruntled at Christmas time because he only got a little box under the tree for his present. And he was the eldest, so his present was open last. And all of the other children were getting big boxes with big toys in it, with sit-on motorcycles and sit-on coasters and other wonderful things. And he saw under the tree only one present in that little tiny box. And his mind was going through all of the injustices that his family were doing to him by giving him that one little box. What can be in that one little box? A piece of coal? He thought he was worth a piece of coal because he perhaps had not been the finest young man he could be. Perhaps it's a letter saying, "Shape up, son, next year it'll be better." Perhaps it's, who knows, perhaps. If he had said to himself, "Great things come in little boxes, that must be something very precious, because I know my dad loves me, I know my mom loves me, I know my family loves me. I'm the eldest in the family, I'm fantastic, I'm glorious, I'm wonderful." If he had had that attitude, his Christmas would have been quite different. And when he finally opened his box and found the key to his brand new convertible car out in front of the house, he exploded with joy. But why did he have to go through those anguishing hours of torment? The anguishing hours and days of torment that he saw that little box under the tree and no additional box was put to it. No additional present was there, not even from his siblings, not even from his brothers and sisters, not one present from anybody, just that little box. Because his family were testing him. They were seeing what he would think. Does he think he's a nice guy? That everything in his life is beautiful? Does he think that everything that comes to him is gorgeous and wonderful? What's his personality-wise like? What sort of attitude does he have about himself? Well, half-half. He knows he's been a rascal at times. He knows that he hasn't done everything the way it would really be best for him to do it, for his highest and best. He knows that he has not been an honorable person under all circumstances, but under most he was pretty good. He knows that he has been this very hard word I'm going to use right now, a word that we want to sort of work with very carefully and be very careful how we use it in our vocabulary. He was very human the past year. He was very human. He allowed himself to be swayed by the world about him. He allowed himself to be swayed by the appearances. He allowed himself to not follow the rules and the principles set up by his family under all circumstances. Mostly, he was pretty good. The parents did a good job in training him. But he allowed himself to feel sorry for himself for that one little box. How many times do we allow ourselves to feel sorry for ourselves because of some little thing that comes into our world? How many times? Whenever we do, we're the one who feels sorry. We're the one who loses. The rest of the world just goes on its merry way, having a joyous time, thinking of nothing but happiness and peace and harmony. And we, for a moment, perhaps the number of days the little box was under the tree, the number of days or hours that we had in our heart the feeling of injustice, those were the number of days that we were tested. Now that's no fun. That's no fun having that happen. The family was very mean to that boy. But the family really wasn't mean. The family said, "I wonder what he'll think. Only one present under the tree. I wonder what he'll think. Surely he'll know we love him. Surely he'll know that we think he's the greatest son any family could ever have. Surely he'll know that." But you see, they didn't know the demons that dwelt within his heart about himself. They didn't know how he had done things that he shouldn't have done. And they probably will never know and don't have to know. But he knew. And because he knew the demons in his own heart, he judged everything by those demons. And as he judged everything by those demons became very real to him. When we allow ourselves to judge our world by the demons we create, we have a very tough time of it. And I keep saying to myself, Herb, stop being such an actor. Stop being so dynamic and so powerful with your presentation of ideas to people. Just play it cool. If they're not going to get the message by playing it cool, what makes you think they're going to get the message by playing it as a very dynamic actor? What makes you think that that's going to work? Well, there's always that desire in my heart that it might work. There's always that desire that perhaps some little shapeshifter might come along and cause a new attitude. And perhaps it does, and perhaps it doesn't. But I say that to myself so often. I am just making people unhappy with me when I'm such an actor. I'm not making them aware of what I'd like to make them aware of. I'm just making them unhappy with me. And I'm just paying the price of somebody else's game because I allow myself to feel that I have a role to play in training and sharing with each of you. But perhaps I should hold back and pull in my horns and just be a gentle, loving person. And then I look at all the great beings who have ever lived and who have ever been great. And I found, as I looked at them, they were not half-baked people. They were not people who gave only a little bit of themselves. They were people who cared with all their heart and soul and being. And they could not under-act. They could not under-play what they felt were vital, important, dynamic things. We read about Jesus chasing the money changers out of the temple. Be that as it may, it was placed in the Bible. We read about Moses throwing down the Ten Commandments and saying, "You bunch of jerks, I had good rules for you here, but no, you got to mess it up." And he was dynamic with them. He went before the Pharaoh and he says, "Hey man, let's cooperate with one another, give me my people and everything is okay." And the Pharaoh says, "No way, no way, you ignorant man. You don't even speak for yourself. You have your brother speak for you, and here you stand there with your rod threatening me that you're going to do something." And so he threw down his rod and it became a snake. And so the Pharaoh's magician threw down their rod and it became a snake. And then he took his staff and he put it into the river, and the river turned to blood. That was tough. That was tough. And he had to shake him up. And he says, "Let my people go." And the Pharaoh still would not do it. And so he said, "All right, all of your children will die under this certain age. All of your newborns will die." And the Pharaoh said, "Surely not." He didn't get the message. And the children died. And finally the Pharaoh says, "Get out, go, go, go." Then after he let the people go, his advisor said to him, "You let those people go. We'll have nobody to do the work around here. We'll have nobody to tend our fires, nobody to take care of our houses. You let our helpers go." And the Pharaoh changed his mind and chased after them. And again, Moses said, "Hey, cool it, go home, go home, go home." And they wouldn't go home. And so Moses said, "All right, open sea." And it opened before him. And they still chased him right into the open sea. And as Moses and the Israelites left the sea, it closed in on the Pharaoh's soldiers, and they were all drowned. tragic, definite, powerful, dynamic. Do you remember it? Oh my, do you remember it? The stories go on where teachers have worked with their people. Moses was in the desert and the people were hungry. They had nothing to eat. And so he says, I will give you manna from heaven. And at that moment, they had all the bread they could eat. What do you want? Do you want a bunch of miracles? Or do you want a bunch of hard things like being drowned? Do you want to have the rules given to you, but because you don't react to them properly, they're smashed in front of you? Do you want those things? What do you want? I keep telling myself, just play it cool. If they don't listen, they're not ready to hear. No matter how dramatically you present the story, they're not ready to hear. The Israelites were taken out of Egypt into the promised land. But Moses, because he played the game a little too heavy, because he was a little too bombastic with them, he brought them through. He was not allowed to enter in to the promised land. And so it happens with teachers, trainers, leaders who become too caring of their people, that sometimes they're not allowed to enter in because they have been too dynamic, too powerful. But to those, they don't care. As long as their people are safe, as long as their students have risen and are rising into the awareness of their divine self. Oh, we can get angry at the teacher. We can get angry, personality-wise, at such a trainer. I'm sure the Pharisees and Sadducees didn't understand Jesus and many of the things he did. Certainly the Israelites didn't understand what Moses was doing. See, Moses took the people 40 years through the desert so that the old people could die out, the ones who lived a life of slavery, so that the young people would never know slavery. They would never remember that they were slaves. And yet, they told the story again and again and again. And the Jews today are slaves to the story of their past. They don't let go of it. You have to let go of it. You have to let go of your past. You have to let go of the experiences that you have that limit you. When you let go of these things, then you rise in your ascended consciousness, you arise in your divine reality. I'm here to be a sharer with you, a teacher. I'm here to do as I feel guided to do, to encourage you to listen, to encourage you to be your finest and highest self. And sometimes in the practice of doing that, I come across like a bulldozer, but a very friendly bulldozer. And your anger knows no end. And that's wonderful. You're confused, and so you say, I'm leaving. I'm quitting. I'm getting out of this crazy house. That's good. That's good, because maybe when you leave the crazy house, you might go into a sane house somewhere. But if you haven't learned the lessons in the crazy house, you'll never live a sane life. Because the lessons in the crazy house are what? Be yourself and have fun. Listen to your own inner drummer. Listen to your own inner musician. Listen to your own inner reality, whatever that may be. Listen to that which you are. And when you listen to that which you are that which you are. But when you don't listen to that which you are, you cannot be that which you are. Because you keep stifling it. You keep pushing it back. You keep saying, I have a right to be unhappy. I have a right to be angry. I have a right. I know how my parents dealt with me when I was a child. I know how my world dealt with me when I was a young person. I know the miserable things that happened in my life. Wonderful. Now is the time to put thee behind me, Satan. Now is the time to put behind us all those negative things that would hold us in bondage, that would keep us from the Holy Land, from the land of milk and honey, from the land where we can be ourselves and have fun. Every thought we have in our mind which says, I have a right, takes away the very right we say we have a right, because it limits us. Let me tell you something that may startle you and may make you climb through the ceiling. You have no rights. You have no rights for anything. Nothing. You don't deserve anything. You are everything. When you start saying, I am, instead of I have a right to it, you see, a right means you haven't got it. Wishing for something means you haven't got it. Hoping something will work out means you doubt it. But when you say, I am that I am, I am the chosen one of the eternal, because I am the eternal and I am me, certainly I'm the chosen one. Each of us are the chosen one of our eternal. None of us superior to the other. None of us affecting the life of the other one tiny little bit. But sometimes we say others affect our life, and we empower them to affect our life. But they're really not affecting our life. They're just doing what they want to do. And we are drawing upon that, thinking that they are doing it to us. They are making these things happen in our world. And we are the ones who are making this happen in our world. No one else can do anything to us. Our personality is who we are. Our personality-wise self is that glorious, fabulous self. You think, well, personality, that's kind of a limiting idea. Sure. Remember this, please. Everything is limiting if you give it a limiting definition. Everything is limiting if you give a limiting definition to it. Everything is limiting if you define it as being limited. Now, how do we define it as being unlimited? Easy. I take $1 million from Sylvia and give it to John. Now, Sylvia says that's limiting. John says that's unlimiting. Now, who's right? Sylvia should say, praise God. I am so happy I have $1 million to give to John. That means I have more. That means I'm independently wealthy. That means that's just a token. That's just a fluff off the top of my pile. But if she thinks that it's all she has, and now John has all that she has, and that's not right, that's not fair, well, why did she give it to him? She gave it to him because she was giving him just a duster off the top of her abundance. Do you understand? But it might not appear that way. It might not appear that way. Some people go around saying, I never have any money, I don't have any money, I don't have... And they're millionaires. Patricia, for one. You know, they go around bad-mouthing themselves and living in limiting circumstances, and they're wealthy. And they want people to feel sorry for them and give them things, and not, they don't want to pay for things themselves. How silly. Pay. Share. Give what you have. Give your abundance. Don't tie yourself to it, because whatever you tie yourself to, that's what you have. And there'll be no more unless you put up a great struggle. Let your personality be outgoing. Let your personality just be flowing out dynamically, wonderfully, powerfully into the universe. And when you do that, then you are the master. You are the creator. You are the allness. I like me, personality-wise. I like me, personality-wise. I like me, personality-wise. You understand why? And I like you, because you're my creation, every one of you, with all of your fabulous talents, all of your marvelous loving attitudes, and all of your gentle caringness. I love you.